Something caught my eye in a recent news story headlined, "Three Arrested After Fight Breaks Out." It was that the fight had been between two groups of, and I quote here, bat-wielding females. Whatever happened to sugar, spice, and everything nice, you ask? Those of us who faced a female bully as early as fourth grade will tell you that in some cases, gender alone says nothing about sugary sweetness and total niceness levels. Scholar Cheryl Hanna writes on women in crime and says it's sometimes the spice ingredient that comes closest to reality, and cayenne pepper at that. We need to understand, she writes, that girls have a biological capacity to be violent, that female violence is a response to conditions in which they find themselves, and that culture tells women and girls when fighting is fair. If so, today's culture must be giving a big thumbs up to female fisticuffs. The Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Protection reports that arrests of young females for violent crimes like assault are up fairly significantly, even though there's been a decrease in juvenile violence overall. Still, it seems that we can't believe that the really cute can be really bad. Hanna suggests that it's all about chivalry, paternalism, and cultural confusion. She says that those three things cause the legal system in general to treat girls who've committed serious offenses more leniently than it would boys. If she's right that we don't punish bad girls for doing bad things as strongly as we should in 2006, it's a long-standing tradition. Take a look at early cases involving women in crime, and you'll find a court system that's clearly confused about gender and what women are capable of. Even in criminal adultery cases, there it was often only the man who faced charges, even when the woman was the married one. So older cases found the gentler gender not guilty of arson or theft or keeping a bawdy house or fortune-telling or selling gin. Sure, if women tried to vote, they'd be convicted of criminal activity. But the crime of voting had an obviously understandable, self-empowering motivation. Some of the best language comes from 1840. The judge back then explained patiently that the humanity of the criminal law gave women a necessary get-out-of-jail-free card. Married women, the court wrote, couldn't possibly be convicted of major crimes because married women acted in subjection to their husbands, even when the woman participated fully. Women had the duty of obedience in crime as in all things, and where there's obedience to him and a necessary confidence in him, there's no free will. Who knows if it's those sorts of cases and that sort of attitude making us more lenient toward women and girls in serious crime today, as the scholar suggests. It's clear, though, that what little girls are made of varies depending on who's doing the ingredient analysis. In law, it was mostly male judges, and the sugary sweet stuff stuck. It still sticks. Take Deborah Lefebvre, the junior high school teacher who admitted to sex with a student and who received house arrest and probation. Prosecutors dropped other charges. Or a recent case from Tennessee. People magazine asked on its April 10th cover, "Why did she kill him?" And inside, "Why did Mary do it?" referring to the woman who, they say, shot her husband and then left with her three daughters. Editors wouldn't be so purposefully dumbfounded if they weren't so intrigued culturally with a good girl gone bad. We often call men who kill by their full names, first, middle, and last. They're made of snips and snails and puppy dog tails. She's the pastor's wife. And as I write this, there are reports that the sheriff allowed her out of jail for a private visit to say goodbye to her husband at the funeral home. We'll see what happens. I'm Amy Guida.